There are a million ways to make money in the food service industry. You just have to find one. On the Titans of Food Service podcast, I interview real life movers and shakers in the food game who cut through all the noise to get to the top. My name is Nick Portillo, and welcome to the Titans of Food Service podcast. Let's jump right into it. Hello and welcome to my fellow food service community from my sunny Orange County, California studio. Nick Portillo here, and this is the Titans of Food Service. In today's episode, I'm joined by Hannah Lopez, a visionary leader in the plant-based food movement dedicated to promoting better for your products and driving innovation in the food service sector. With a strong commitment to elevating the plant-based food industry, Hannah is the Director of Marketplace for Food Service for the Plant-Based Foods Association, or PBFA for short, the pioneering trade association representing leading plant-based food companies nationwide. Driven by her passion for sustainable and ethical food choices, Hannah aims to infuse value and inspiration into our industry by championing the power of plants on menus. She believes that consumer preferences play a crucial role in fostering significant change, and through her work with PBFA, she serves as a compass for businesses navigating this transformative journey. In our conversation, we're going to talk about plant-based foods, the future of plant-based foods. We're also going to talk about recent legislation that happened here near me in Los Angeles County, so you'll learn a little bit more about what's happening local here in California. And then also going to talk about her background, starting a business with her mom and having that entrepreneurial spirit. I think you're really going to enjoy the conversation. So with that, let's go ahead and welcome Hannah. All right, Hannah, welcome to the Titans of Food Service podcast. I appreciate you taking time out of your day to come on and meet with me.
Thank you. Happy to be here and happy to connect.
Yeah. Are you calling in from West Palm Beach, Florida?
Yes. It's sunny and 85.
Nice. I'm on the opposite side of the country as you. I'm here in Orange County and I'm looking out the window here. Also sunny. I don't think it's 85, but it's probably more like 75 here, which I know there's a lot of parts of the country that are jealous of that.
Right. I'm either rubbing it in someone's face or I'm making them like reminisce on their vacation days. So both of us are very lucky to live in places that have sunshine all year round.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what I like to do when I start off with my guests is do the fiery five food service questions. They're like five icebreaker questions. Are you ready?
I am ready. Let's go.
If you could have dinner with any one person, historical or alive, who would it be and why?
Oh, man. Okay. Right off the cuff. You know, I am a big Johnny Cash fan. I love music. I think he would be such an interesting human being to have dinner with. Yeah, I think that would be my first go-to.
Okay, great choice. If someone had one night in West Palm Beach, where must they eat?
Man, you're going to think I'm so bougie for saying this, but the Breakers, which is a very historic hotel on the beach. Many famous people have gotten married there. There's a beautiful restaurant right on the water. Great food. So that would be my pick.
If you could only have one type of cuisine for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Cuisine. So are we talking type of like flavor, culturally food, like Mexican food?
Think of like, like Mexican food or Italian food, Vietnamese food, that road.
I would say I would probably go with Mediterranean food.
Okay. Is there a big Mediterranean influence there in where you live?
Not so much. No, we have a lot of we have a lot of Hispanic cultures here in South Florida. So Mexican food's really heavy on the scene. Cuban food, some of the Asian cultures starting to break in. Venezuelan, like Miami. You go to Miami and you're basically in South America. But I love a good Greek salad. You know, I just feel like if I had to eat one thing, that would be it.
Are there any foods or dishes you've wanted to try but haven't yet?
I explore quite a bit with food. I am not shy. So I think okay. I've traveled a lot. I've lived in many different countries around the world. And I've had some interesting experiences with some different flavors and food types. But yeah, I feel like I'm pretty content with my food exploration. Yeah.
Okay. And my last question is, do you have a favorite food-related memory from traveling?
Yeah, Thailand. Thailand for sure. I went to Thailand in 2019 and I went on a hike through the Chiang Mai Mountains. And my tour guide, he kept collecting things like plants and herbs, and he kept stuffing them in his bag. And then we got to the top of this mountain and he started a fire and he was making pad Thai with like all the stuff he was collecting along the way. And it was the best pad Thai I've ever had in my life. Like, this is insane. Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That is a great memory. That's a really, I've asked that question quite a few times, but I think that ranks up there for one of the best responses that I've gotten.
Awesome. Yeah. It was an adventure.
Thank you for humoring me through the Fiery Five food service questions. Now let's jump into who are you and what are you currently up to in the food service space?
Yes. So who am I? My name's Hannah Lopez. I'm the director of food service on the marketplace development team at the Plant-Based Foods Association. I've been with the organization for about a year and a half now. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, I've always been in hospitality, but where I really fell in love with it, I was working for a fast casual restaurant chain, started with a single unit and grew it to 26 units before I left as their head of marketing. So I really got a sense of what the world of hospitality looks like from a business perspective and an operations perspective, finance, and obviously marketing. But that's kind of my background as well.
What made you want to get into the plant-based side?
Yeah, so not taking you too far back in my life, but I actually used to own a cold press juice business in my early days. So I was manufacturing cold press juice when Suja was just hitting the scene and picking up a lot of momentum. And that's where I fell in love with plant-based eating. I got my holistic nutrition certification and I was a raw vegan at the time. So I was really, really into just the lifestyle and really how that made me feel and the opportunities that provided. I learned a lot being in the CPG space, which funny enough, I'm now using those learnings to in my current role here at PBFA. But it just kind of showed me that there isn't just one way of eating, that there are so many ways of eating and that the sad salads are not the only way to be plant-based, that plant-based foods can actually be very exciting. So,
what made you want to start a juice company? I think that's really impressive.
Really great question. It's probably the hardest business to be in because you're dealing with fresh commodities, like hundreds of pounds of kale, right? You lose a purchase order, you're done. Like, that's it. And so, not to discount too much, I did get on the shelves of Whole Foods, and that was a moment of, being proud. You think as a CPG brand, you're like, that's the goal. That's Everest, right? Let's get on those shelves, the marketplace, and then everything is just easy from there. But I fell in love with juicing myself personally, and I started making it with my mom. She became my business partner. And so it was like a mother-daughter team, and we raised some capital, and we were the first to use HPP, which is like high pressure processing in South Florida. And I loved it. I loved how it made me feel. I loved exploring the different flavors and mixing it together. It was just it was a fun time of my life, but learned a lot.
What'd you learn about yourself in that time?
Okay, mom, I love you, but don't get into business with family. And she'll say the same thing.
Yeah.
We're too much alike. So that would be first and foremost. Two, and this is another, on contrary belief, that raising the money is not the hardest part. And that to us came easier than understanding how to scale the business. I think the biggest learning was if I ever were to go into CPG again, consumer product goods, I would research the heck out of the marketplace and really understand what segment I want to be in. Because at the time, I'm like, I want to be in hotels. I want to be in restaurants. I want to be on the shelves of Whole Foods. And you can't do all things with limited budget. So that would be my top three.
Okay. Going through entrepreneurship and an entrepreneurial journey, a little bit about me is I own my own business here in We're a food service broker. We're in all of California, Nevada, and Hawaii, and been in business now for about 9 years. And I think we've got 25, 30 employees, and wow, it's been a really great run for us. It's hard to scale a business. You know, I can speak to experience of being in a service business. It's very difficult for us. We're very labor intensive, which I'm sure CPG, I mean, there's a labor component, but there's other components to it as well. And yeah, we're constantly faced with that is how do we, you know, prioritize things like longevity of the business, looking long-term, short-term profitability, things like that. And it's sometimes it can keep you up at night trying to figure out what's the right equation. You know, how much money do you dump into growth and funding that as well? So it's always kind of a weird balance that we have to look at to make sure that the business is sustainable.
Right. And you have a large team. I mean, 25, 30 teammates.
Yeah.
Those are a lot of households to consider in every decision you're making.
That's right.
I didn't have as big of a team, but I can only imagine. I mean, I had a team of 5 people and it kept me up at night. I need to make sure that they can pay their bills. Mm-hmm. It starts to it transcends, their personal life does transcend into your own as an owner of a business. But yeah, I think you're constantly juggling, okay, we need to grow a little bit, but we need to have a strong foundation and sustain and nurture and all of those things that, you know, I think CEOs or founders, they'll get to a certain point, mm-hmm, where their eye is on the prize so much that maybe they're not feeding the kids at home still. And I think that is something that I've experienced personally in the world of my career trajectory that I've been on. But, you know, you have to be able to nurture the growth as well as scale.
Totally. When it came to raising money, had you or your mom ever done that before?
No.
Okay. Tell me about that.
No way. So it's funny because I'm so marketing brand heavy. I had the whole website and logo and all the assets, all the fun stuff, right? Had all of our formulations. And then we said, okay, we need to raise some money. Let me put a pro forma together. Like, I need to price things out. So I actually engaged with my local small business association. This was in Naples. This is the west coast of Florida. And I'd meet with the guy. He became my mentor. I met with him once a week. And he helped me build out a business plan. We're talking old school style business plan. But it was the best thing I could have ever done. And I still very much believe in business plans and writing it out. And so he's like, okay, let's come up with your number. And I had the number. It was $80,000. Like, oh my God, I've never even seen that much money. And now I'm going to go ask people to believe in me without even having a proof of product that their $80,000 is going to a well-spent place. And I still get goosebumps. I have goosebumps now just remembering that moment of I had 2 investor meetings. And on the second meeting, it was 2 gentlemen, and they're like, "We'll send you the money."
Wow!
You know, I pitched them. They tried the product. They invited their wives in. I won the wives over, and it was like, my mom and I were just like, "This is happening." And when we got the investment, and obviously, you know, they had their return. They wanted their return, and you know, you're now no longer just in business with your mom. You're now in business with investors, and it just takes the game to a whole different level.
If you can look back, would you do it the same?
I would have absolutely raised the capital in the same way. I think we were really smart about how much equity we had in the business and wanting to have that retention of control. I would have gotten way more focused on how I wanted to grow the business. I think, as I alluded to before, it was very much like a shotgun approach where it was just like spraying and praying and whoever wants to buy my product can buy it. Mm-hmm. Having very limited personnel and the funds to hire more, it was really my mom and I on the front lines of trying to sell and produce and operate. So I would have invested in people more and then gotten hyper-focused on where to sell the product.
So when are you going to start your next company?
Don't even start. Well, what I love, and this is so true, and this is actually why part of the reason why I entertained this position with PBFA is because I get to work with over 150 CPG brands, mm-hmm, on a daily basis. And they're in different life cycles of their business. Some are scrappy startups, and then where they don't even have a CEO yet. And then, you know, the large 100 million plus companies of the world. And I get to really feel that entrepreneur spirit mm-hmm. alongside these brands who are trying to find solutions to these challenges. And so I don't think I would ever venture out to do it myself again. I am getting my fix where I'm at.
That's yeah. great. It sounds yeah. like you found in, let's just call it an arena, right? This plant-based mm-hmm. side that you're passionate about. You know, I was reading your bio a little bit, better for you products in the CPG space. Like you, it seems like you've really found potentially maybe a home that, you know, you could put your full attention and passion into, which there's a lot of people, especially in the food service space, that are still trying to find that. You know, it's hard to find that.
Yeah.
And I think it's really good that you've been able to find this organization, become a part of it, and really sink your teeth into it.
Yeah, I never thought that I'd be working one for a trade association.
Yeah.
I never thought that I would still be in food service with leaving food service. I thought that the path of having a career in a food service environment was very linear. Mm-hmm. It was that corporate ladder. You're the hostess, then the waiter, then the bartender, then the manager, then the this, then the that. And it's always been perceived as that. But I think it's really cool that we're now looking at food service in all of its variety and vastness of what that really entails. It's anyone eating outside of their home.
Absolutely.
In all those capacities. And so getting to even get that experience and working with colleges and universities and airports and hospitals and schools, it's like, wow, there's a whole other world to food service that I didn't know existed until coming to PBFA.
At PBFA, what does your day-to-day life look like?
It's fun. I do a lot of thought leadership discussions such as this, trade shows. I'm actually speaking this Thursday, the 11th or 12th at the F&B at Sea show in Miami. It's like the cruise line industry, which, holy cow, there's so much to unpack there. But talking about the state of plant-based foods, also a lot of one-to-one consulting with brands. So I am constantly talking to our member companies. I'm also, you know, reaching out and connecting with operators on a daily basis. So working with chefs and culinary VPs of different organizations, working with the Sodexo folks, and just really trying to see how I can add a value to what they're trying to do with their plant-based assortment goals. And so no 2 days really look alike because I'm working with so many different companies, but we're all going towards the same goal of having more assortment and variety of plant-based foods in the marketplace.
This is probably a very generic and broad question, but what is the future of plant-based? What does that look like?
I think it's a really good question, especially because there's been so much speculation around mm-hmm. plant-based foods, and a lot of that is driven by the media. We're very data-driven, so we really tap into the consumer, because really what they're spending their money on is what's going to dictate the future of plant-based foods. And we're not slowing down. We're actually sustaining. The entire food market dipped last year, but plant-based foods in retail alone, we're still over an $8 billion industry. And we're still very steady around the trajectories that we set out for 7 years ago. So we're not slowing down. I think from a manufacturing supply chain perspective, as more food service operators are, okay, I'm listening now. I'm interested. Okay, my guest is actually asking for this. Let me entertain a cutting or a sampling. I think that it's going to put more pressure on brands to perform from a food waste perspective, labor perspective, and price. And those are the three things, as you know, operators really care about. And
that's
so
right.
If they can't meet their margin and they can't cut labor, if it's not adding operational value, probably won't land on the menu. So those are some of the challenges I think the industry as a whole are going to overcome. And then obviously leaning into flavors is a big one too.
I work with some plant-based brands that are pretty well established, and you're right on the data piece. They are very data-driven, data-forward, more than other brands that have been, you know, like an animal meat company or a frozen vegetable company, right? They are more data. That's very important to them. So it's interesting to see the differences and how they run it. It almost seems to me like they run it like a tech company in a way.
Yeah.
The data that they look for from us is it's much more detailed, understanding really who their consumer is and what makes them want to purchase their products.
Yeah. And I work with brokers too. And so really we're tapping into Spin's Technomic Data Essentials, these mm-hmm. big giants in the data space. And we're trying to distill it down to what matters. And so we have a plant-based global alliance initiative right now. And we've partnered with plant-based trade associations around the world. I think we're at like 16 countries.
Wow.
And we did a study with them. And we just got some preliminary results back that showed that Turkey and Italy and Chile and all these different countries, 51% of consumers that are actually purchasing plant-based foods are omnivores. They're eating meat as well. And so it's no longer just about the 2 to 3% vegan market, which is a very strong misconception, especially in our world of food service, where we're working with food service operators that have been in the game for 30 plus years in some cases. And, 10 years ago, they would have laughed you out of the room if you brought up a plant-based burger. And now it's starting to say, oh, my meat eater is actually trying to reduce consumption. I should have an option for them to help them mm-hmm. meet those goals.
Have other countries better adopted plant-based foods than the U.S. has?
Oh, yeah. So I would say the U.K. is definitely leading in the space.
Wow. I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that they're just a little bit ahead in terms mm-hmm. of accessibility. And then there's other places, and I want to say it's actually Turkey, if I'm correct, who bans plant-based cheese completely.
They like ban
you,
it?
They ban it. Like, you can't sell it. You can't manufacture it.
Wow.
Yeah. And so there's like this spectrum. But I think from a sourcing perspective, you know, the U.S. brands are really working hard to source ingredient supply here locally to try to help those economies of scale as well. But yeah, the U.K. definitely with Tesco and Safeway, they're really taking charge on the plant-based front.
Okay. I didn't know that. It's good to know. Mm-hmm. I know we talked a little off camera about here in LA County, which is, for me, it's only a 30-minute drive away. There's new legislation that just came out in early March, I think around March 1st, this plant-based by default in I think state-run departments. What do you know about that? And maybe some background.
Sure. So I was just as excited to see the news around that. And we had a few excited member companies who are also LA-based, you know, reach out and say, how can we get involved? And I think it's the start of something big. And, you know, there are companies like Greener, it's called Greener by Default. And they really focus on showing that if you have a plant-based option by default, I think the number was over 80% will consume it. If it's there, if it's in front of them and it looks appetizing and it tastes great, the default works. So it's really just an ode to accessibility. And so the fact that LA County is saying, no, we're drawing a line in the sand and we're going to say that these federal facilities need to have this program intact is really, I think it's coming off of a lot of the work that we're doing on the Hill in Congress. We have the Plant-Based Foods Institute that does a lot of our policy work for around plant-based foods. And the Biden administration, they had announced that they want all federal facilities in the U.S. to serve at least one plant-based meal with every meal served. And they did this. This is actually a week or two after I joined the organization. And then I'm hopping on a Zoom call with the White House and Chef Andrew Zimmern and EWG. I'm like, what's going on here? But it was to basically announce that, you know, we have the support that, you know, we need to have. I think there's over 600 federal facilities across the nation. We're talking prisons to the FBI building and hundreds of meals served to the national parks. I mean, things that you just don't think about, right? Mm-hmm. And to advocate to have at least one plant-based option. And we're not talking about a salad. We're not talking about just throw some celery and cucumber together and now that's our plant-based option. We're talking about a replacement of an animal product. And so I think that LA really drawing that line in the sand is just the beginning for other counties to do the same.
So the LA County one, it's at the state level or is it federal facilities that it affects?
You know, it's just state. I believe it's just state. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And plant-based by default just means, from what it sounds like, you have your menu, right? Of whatever your establishment is. And so you have to offer one animal alternative, plant-based alternative, essentially.
Yes. Yeah.
So alternative to animal meat.
Right. So instead of saying, starting the menu with chicken Caesar salad, burger, chicken nuggets, et cetera. And then, which we've seen on menus in tiny little font, plant-based burger or asterisk for a vegan option or substitution, you know, that's how it's been. Now it's, here's your plant-based burger. It's leading with the plant-based dish option versus it kind of tailing in the shadows.
And I would imagine across the country, other counties will get on board. They'll see what LA County has done and, you know, probably see how it unfolds at least in the short term and then maybe implement that locally at their own counties as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the business side of it too, like the corporations, like Google, for example, they're really, and LinkedIn, you know, they're all trying to do better for their employees. Mm-hmm. So I think that the larger organizations saying, no, we're going to have plant-based by default on all of our meal occasions, I think that's going to drive a lot of influence in their own communities. So I'm really excited to see how that creates an impact.
Absolutely. And what about for you? If you look far into the future, what is something that you want to achieve personally that you haven't yet achieved?
Within this industry?
Yeah. Yes.
I would love to inspire a food service management group. I'm not going to say any names.
Okay.
But there are a few that have said, no, we are going to be X percent plant-based by this year and we're doing it. They're putting action behind the intention. I would really love to be someone who would take lead on inspiring a very similar, you know, approach to their business and food system model of getting them on board. And I think the food service management groups, they are just, they're so big and they're feeding so many people and there's so much food going through those channels that if we could get a few more of the big boys to jump in and say, yes, we're going to join forces with our peers who are doing this and they're finding so much success because a lot of these food service management groups are feeding the Gen Z. They're going to be feeding Alpha. And so at scale. And I think that those two generations, I mean, Alpha, we're talking my daughter's age, which is, you know, 4. So it's just a couple years to go. But Gen Zers are really saying, no, 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 we're not giving you an option. We want plant-based and we're going to demand it until we get it.
I love that. I love that. What is the best way for people to reach out to you if they want to connect with you?
They can reach out direct. I am not shy with my email address. So hannah@plantbasedfoods.org or LinkedIn, the fabulous world of LinkedIn, which is where we connected. So
okay,
find me there.
Very good. Well, Hannah, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. And I enjoyed our conversation. I learned some things along the way. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Of course.